In the podcast today, I'm joined by Philippa Games. Philippa is a digital marketing and analytics guru. I'm going to put Philippa on a bit of a pedestal before we start, because in the preamble to this particular conversation, we were exploring some real hot topics, and I know these are topics that are going to resonate with you. If you're a marketer, you need to know this stuff. And if you've been shying away from it, we're going to make you listen to this because it's very, very important. And if you're a business owner, we've got some very interesting insights that Philippa is going to share around some real case studies where she's been able to kind of show real value, real commercial value in getting interested in this stuff. This is not stuff that is too scary if you've got somebody like Philippa by your side to guide you through the experience. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be on the show.
And I always love putting people on a pedestal before we start, because the level of expectation is now so high.
Right. Wow. No pressure.
Can Philippa demystify this thing called analytics and vanity metrics, which is kind of part of the title of the episode, which is avoiding vanity metrics. So for those who don't understand, before we begin properly, what a vanity metric is, do you want to give them some guidance?
Well, I guess vanity is, you know, sort of a form of emptiness. So basically, the one of the key challenges about analytics is that you bring up your analytics tool and it's just a mass of graphs and numbers. And for many people who aren't, you know, over familiar with looking at it, it can be incredibly intimidating. I don't know how many in the old Google Analytics, I think there are at least 140 default reports. I mean, so there's this massive stuff to look at. And so people go, okay, what's easy, right? What can I just sort of, and so they'll say, right, did I get more visitors than I did last week or last month or whatever period I'm looking at? And if the answer to that is yes, they'll go, oh, great, everything's good. And now I can go do something else. That's an example of a vanity metric, because it doesn't really tell you anything in and of itself. Because if you got lots more visitors, but they weren't the sort of people who are going to buy your stuff or fulfill whatever outcomes it is you're looking for, then so what, right? It didn't actually do you any good. So the point is, you really need to dig into your analytics and actually know what questions you want to ask it. Otherwise you're just going, did we have more of something? But the answer, whether it's yes or no, if it's no, equally, it doesn't tell you, well, why not? And what can we do about that?
Yeah. And I guess in some ways I kind of share the pain. I mean, there's a little bit of kind of marketing empathy that goes on here, because I didn't realize it was that number of kind of standard reports. I mean, that's just frightening. And of course, we've got the new version of Google Analytics out now, GA4. And when you look at that, actually, the number of reports isn't that obvious. I can't even find them. Exactly. I've been doing this stuff forever. And every time I think, oh, I've got to go in and look at the analytics, you know, I'm pretty good with numbers. I'm not great, but I'm pretty good. I can just imagine I have a huge empathy with people who it isn't their first choice. They want to be doing the content. They want to be developing new services. They want to be out with customers. How do we get people interested and kind of almost embracing the relevance of this when it looks so ugly and so hard to do?
Yeah, it's, you know, GA4 is it's really a shame. I mean, you know, okay, everybody loved the previous version and everybody had got used to using it. And it was really, you know, comparatively easy to use. And I understand the impetus behind GA4, and you know, a lot of it had to do with privacy and GDPR and so on. But whoever designed it, I think it was designed by engineers. It definitely wasn't designed by marketers. And it definitely wasn't designed by usability experts. Because absolutely, I mean, one of the things that people hate about it is that it can be quite complicated to set up and to try and get your mind around just look how it looks and how you manipulate it. And the sad thing about that is that if you get it right and you use the immense customization possibilities that it's got, you can customize it to your business, I mean, which you should do. And it can do some amazing things. I mean, it can tell me stuff that I could never have got out of UA, the previous version. So it's an amazing tool. that's incredibly frustrating. So it's which is, you know, a lot of what people are saying. And the answer to how you get into it is, honestly, you this is one of the biggest mistakes that I see businesses making, is it's very tempting to jump into marketing, you know, to jump into, oh, we've got to do social media. We've got to get our SEO better. We've got to do some email or whatever it is, without creating a strategy. That's an overall strategy that says, okay, what are we trying to achieve? How are we doing that? How do the different ways in which we're doing that interconnect and interrelate, and how can we sort of leverage that whole piece? And they just jump in, and then they don't know what's working and what's not working. But the truth is, if you don't use analytics, if you don't have those insights, then you're honestly shooting in the dark, because there are so many things that you can't know. You can't just look at a website and say, is it working? Right. And so the key thing really is to stop, think about your strategies, think about what you're trying to achieve, and that will allow you to come up with questions, right? We're trying to sell more products. Okay, are people buying more products? If they're not, why not? Where can we see them dropping out? Are we trying to create amazing content? Well, great. So you know, which of our content pieces do people engage with? Do they watch our videos? Do they watch all of the video, or do they just watch 10 seconds and drop off? Right. This is the sort of stuff you can't know without delving into what the analytics tell you. But it's really key information. So how do you get into it is, you've got to know how to ask it whether what we're trying to do is happening.
So, yeah, because it's interesting that I've always described it as kind of the cart before the horse, because it kind of feels that for a lot of us, and I'll put myself in the early days, sometimes now, I have to admit, we kind of jump in there and wait for Google Analytics or, you know, other sort of, you know, social media dashboards, similarly apply to the same kind of philosophy. You kind of jump in and you think, right, now I've got to find some answers. And you go looking around, you go down all these little bunny holes and there's nothing there. You go down this dead end lane and it's like, oh, there's nothing there. And then you lose either momentum or you lose the will to live, because you just can't find what, you know, you think you should be able to spot, because it is either so complex or you just didn't click on that little filter which would have given you the answer, but you didn't even realize it was there. So are you advocating, what I think I'm hearing is, that you should really know your questions first, and then you use it almost as a tool to either prove or disprove your hypothesis. So it's a little bit scientific, isn't it? Rather than just being like a treasure hunt or something like that, where you're just searching for treasure randomly. Is it the right way around to do it, with the questions first?
Well, like I said, I mean, sometimes something's going to jump out at you, right? I mean, you could just honestly look at a report of engagement time on a page, on all your different pages, and something's going to say, oh, look, these pages are getting no traction. I mean, and that might jump out. And if those are pages that really should be getting attention, then that's right there, a signal to say what's going on. And that's, for example, could be because, I mean, I've seen this a lot as well. Even though it's an important page, for some, you actually have overlooked the fact that you're not really driving visitors to it, so they don't necessarily know it's there. I see that a lot. Business owners and marketers get so close to their own websites because they're very familiar with them. And then they'll say, oh, but that's obvious. It's right there. Look, it's there in the menu or whatever. And I'll say, yeah, but it's up there in the menu. It's a small little, it's in small print or something. And if I scroll, I lose the menu. So I, you know, but yeah, so the thing that you have to do, if, I mean, so those things that jump out, okay, fine. So we can make a list of those things that we notice along the way that we want to investigate. But also, I mean, a lot of times, a prospective client will come to me because they know there's a problem. For example, somebody came recently and said, I've got quite a few, I mean, I'm getting a lot of product views. It was an e-commerce site, right? But nobody's adding anything to their shopping cart. And in this case, it was a site that had both an e-commerce store and also physical stores, so that they knew that these products were selling in their physical stores. So it's not that the product isn't attractive or the price is wrong or stuff like that, because physically people buy it, you know, in real life people buy it. So something seems to be going wrong with trying to sell these things on the website. So what could it be? So like, if you know you've got a problem, then or you know that you there's an area where you want to ask questions. I mean, our advertising campaigns are getting lots of clicks, but those people don't seem to be buying. So what's going wrong? And then it becomes like a detective story, right? Because you've got to follow the clues. So, you know, is it the landing page that doesn't match up with whatever kind of expectations you set up with the ads? You know, is it because there isn't a call to action on the landing page that really drives people to move to the next stage? You know, I mean, so you unless it's something completely obvious, like, you know, the link's broken, you know, okay, fine, we know what to do. Then you come up with a theory, right? Like for example, on that products page, the products that I was talking about, the products weren't particularly well displayed, you know, so is it something to do with that? Is it that people feel like they can't get enough information, they can't see the 360 degree view or whatever it is? But you come up with what you think it might be, and then you have to test it. And again, one of the nice things about a tool like we've been talking about Google Analytics is that you can test it. So you can set up simple tests, you know, that we call A-B tests, where you have two different versions. So you might say, let's try and test whether the call to action is worded correctly. So you can try a version when you have different words on the call to action button, or where you move the call to action button. A lot of sites don't come to the call to action until the bottom of the page. Well, if people don't scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page, they're never going to see it. One of the nice things about GA4 is that you can very granularly test how far down the page people get. Without having to go to a separate heat map tool, for example. So, you know, you can really figure out how much of the content do most people see. So then, they actually, you know, 75% of my visitors never see that call to action at the bottom. What's the solution? How about having another call to action further up the page where they will see it? I mean, you know, who made a rule that says you can only have one call to action on the page? So yeah, there's all sorts of theories you can come up with. And then the point is to test which of those theories seems to actually move the needle, right?
I'm feeling a slightly different role or job description we're still talking about Google Analytics here, but or GA4, almost a different job description for it, because I think for lots of people, business owners, you know, people, marketers who are in a business reporting to potentially a line manager, where, you know, at the end of every month, they have to produce the monthly report, and they'll kind of, you know, open up Google Analytics, do a report on the same old stuff every month. Mm-hmm. They're possibly missing the point here from the way you're describing it, because if they do the detective game, so they're actually willing to spend a little bit of time with a little bit of patience to just go a little bit deeper, maybe on what we might call the customer journey. So this plotting out of step by step the route that a customer is going to potentially take, or at that stage you're describing there, Philippa, the prospect, because they're not actually a customer because they haven't actually bought yet. But if it was mapped out as a step by step journey, then it feels, from the way you're describing it, this opens up at every step in the journey an opportunity to forensically fine-tune, if we were to describe it like that. So you can then, as you say, move the call to action button. You can maybe even just change the color scheme of that landing page that they've mm-hmm. just arrived at. Or, you know, there's 101, I guess, different options you have. But it's so not a vanity metric of, okay, well, this was the sheer volume of people who came to the front door. We don't know where they went, but they came to the site. This is right. A whole different job description for it, isn't it?
Right. And, you know, I mean, obviously, I guess if it's, you know, you're talking about an agency like doing your SEO or doing your pay-per-click marketing, you know, their job is to get you more visitors. And they could argue, well, okay, we got you more visitors, so we're doing what you're paying us for. On the other hand, are they getting you qualified visitors? You know, are they getting you actually the sort of visitors that you want, as opposed to just numbers, right? Because that's going to make a huge difference. You know, we have a metric we call cost per acquisition, right? Which is how much does it cost to get us a customer? If it costs us three times as much to get a customer as they're going to spend on average, then we're not doing so well, right? I think one of the things I love about analytics, as you can tell, I am a bit of a geek about this, and I do enjoy, I mean, it's my favorite part of digital marketing. I know you teach, I also teach digital marketing in general. I've taught at three business schools around the world. But this is absolutely my favorite bit. And one of the things I love about it is that I think it's an amazing combination of being a data geek and being very creative, which, you know, is an unusual combination because, yeah, you can do all the data stuff. And then in the beginning, you have to do all the boring stuff about, you know, is the data clean? Is it accurate? Is it collected as fully as it should be? Are we protecting people's privacy in the way that we're supposed to, and all of that? Because obviously, if you can't rely on your data, then the rest of it is not worth doing. So you do all that. You make sure all the settings are right. Because honestly, if you run Google Analytics out of the box, it's got some settings that are really not helpful. Like, did you know out of the box, it only retains data for 2 months, which, if you want to do any sort of benchmarking, or, you know, it's not particularly helpful. It's very strange because it's got only two settings. You can either have 2 months or 14 months. So you can't choose. I mean, you can choose, but only between those two. So, you know, obviously normally I would set it to 14 months unless the business really doesn't, you know, has some sort of privacy reason for not wanting to retain data. So as I say, you do all the sort of data stuff at the beginning, and then, you know, you've got decent numbers, hopefully. And then this whole, like, I wonder if this is happening, is where you have to get creative. And if it is happening, or if there's a problem here, what do we do about it? Because we want to get to the so what, right? So we can diagnose a problem or a potential area for optimization. And then we want to say, okay, so what can we do here? Which is also part of what I do. And so that's the piece that I really find interesting.
And there is a creativity in there, isn't there? Because it's kind of like, okay, so now we've identified this thing, whatever this thing is, what are we going to do about it? And that's then where it becomes quite fun, because there's experimentation, there's a bit of science here, because it's data led. You've always got a benchmark to compare to, because obviously you want to make a change that sees then an improvement, not a backward step. But you might even see that, because you might decide, okay, well, we're going to move the call to action button, and then actually you get a worse result. But that's kind of okay, because you'll be aware of it. So then you can readjust. Right. So it's quite a kind of an ongoing process, isn't it? Once you open this can of worms, you almost can't close it, because you know too much.
But we also, I mean, it's also an opportunity to identify new products, service opportunities, new market opportunities. I mean, I can tell you a story from, this is a while ago now, actually, but analytics has been around a while. But I was working with somebody who was an employment lawyer. But she had a corporate training firm. So she was doing training for larger companies in the Silicon Valley area around, you know, how to prevent sexual harassment suits at work, that kind of stuff, right? So helping companies to prevent different types of employee lawsuits. And So she had a huge amount of content on her site, because for somebody like that, obviously they've got to prove their expertise and their authority in the field. And one of the things that's an absolute goldmine on your website, if you have a lot of content, is your internal site. So the search engine that's on your site, and the analytics can tell you what's going on in that, which is fantastic information. And based on some of the searches, so you can tell, what are people looking for? And do they find it? And if so, where do they find it, and so on? And then what do they do, right? So we realized from the nature of the searches that many people coming to her website were not employers who were going to hire her, but employees saying, I think I've been sexually harassed, what do I do? Or I think I should be getting overtime, but I'm not. Should I, you know, or I was just fired and I think that it was unfair termination, unfair dismissal, right? And that's not her market. She didn't work with individuals. She didn't do lawyering in that sense. But there were so many of them that we created a load of ebooks. And so the idea was, okay, so you think you're being sexually harassed. Many cases that people think are sexual harassment are legally not. So before you spend a ton of money on a lawyer, here's a little ebook with some basic questions to tell you whether or not you might have a case. And obviously it's got legal disclaimers all over it, but I mean, it's a decent guide, a beginning guide to sort of give you some thinking, some ways to think about it, right? So we created a ton of those. I mean, there was also one for I'm being accused of harassment. We created a sexual harassment prevention manual and one for overtime and so on. And, you know, ebooks are fantastic because they sell them. I mean, there's no fulfillment, right? And some of them were really impulse buy, like under $20. Some of the manuals were a bit more expensive, but these things sold, you know, several thousand a month because people would come from all over the country. And they just, the whole thing just ran itself once it was up and running. I only identified the opportunity from that for that by looking into the numbers in the analytics. So that's really my point, is it's this sort of stuff you would never have known. You can't tell who's coming to your website and what they're looking for just by looking at the website, right?
Wow, that's such a powerful example. I think there's anybody who's a business owner is now thinking, hold on a minute. So I've got all this untapped potential and I had even no idea that this could be happening. I can see there's, you know, because my marketing person is giving me these web stats each month and I'm thinking, yeah, okay, we're doing okay. I have no idea actually what it means. But actually within those numbers then, Philippa is telling me I've got this potential that we might have a whole new audience there. And if we were to pivot in that direction, there could be a revenue opportunity. I mean, this is quite profound stuff, isn't it? This is not what I think most people would think of when they think Google Analytics, website reports and insights and stuff. They're not thinking in that kind of opportunistic way that there could be a real gold mine hidden within it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I have other stories like that. I was telling you before we started the recording that there's a free ebook on my website, which is designed to give people some ideas. Like, these are actual outcomes that you can create from looking at the insights. And in there, there's a B2B one from an industrial manufacturer, same kind of thing. We identified ways to take visitors who weren't qualified for the main business, but were coming in significant numbers, and created a whole new side line that was worth, you know, that paid off. So I won't give away the whole story now, but if people would like to see it, it's you'll make a link to my ebook, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think this is just such valuable stuff, because once you kind of read some of these examples, you'll just see that they come at you from different angles that you wouldn't even believe. I mean, I'm going to ask you, Philip, I mean, do you think we've, you know, those of us who have used or continue to use things like Google Analytics, we've been having the wrong conversation, either with ourselves or with the people that we're reporting to, either a client or a manager? Have we kind of almost been a little bit remiss in talking about this in the wrong way? We've been thinking about this is all about the numbers, whereas actually what we should be saying is, what would you like to know? What are you curious about to do with your website? And actually posing questions rather than giving just numbers, because the numbers aren't really helpful because nobody understands them, including ourselves. Is it the wrong conversation that all of these years we've been getting it wrong?
I mean, to me, the point is that the key question is, so what? Right? So, okay, here's the number of visitors you had. So what? I mean, is it good? Is it bad? I don't know. What is it that I want? Am I getting what I want? Otherwise, why are you bothering with the website? I think that's really the point. I mean, so, you know, we talked about planning. I mean, one of the things that, you know, I try to do is to create a measurement plan, which looks at all of the different stages you mentioned, the customer journey, right? But you know, we all focus on people buying stuff, especially if we actually have a site that literally directly sells. So, you know, buying stuff, lead generation, et cetera, which is of course why we're in business. But many people don't buy stuff immediately. They want to know who you are. What do you do? Do we relate? Do I trust you? Right. And so the steps along the way of the customer journey. So acquisition is, you know, okay, SEO, because people haven't heard of you until they have. But then there's the whole engagement consideration phase where they're thinking about, do I want to do business with you? And we don't, in my opinion, we don't think about that stage enough in terms of how is our website nurturing this potential relationship. And then similarly, after they bought something from you, you know, the marketing thing is it takes a whole lot more of time and effort to get a new customer as it does to retain one. So what are we doing to retain people's loyalty? Are we going back and, like, if they did buy something, you know, offering related products, offering, you know, incentives to come back and buy more? Do we have, like, a I don't know, a loyalty club? I mean, obviously it depends on the business, but you know, are we considering all stages of the customer journey and not just the one where we actually take the check, right? So yeah, if you don't ask so what, then why are you bothering?
Yeah, you've just kind of, I think in my head now, you've kind of reinvented how I picture in my mind's eye the customer journey. I've got a very clear, when I'm doing the teaching that you were talking about earlier, I've got a very clear schematic of taking people from that very first touch point of awareness right at the start of the journey, all the way through kind of, it's a little bit like a sales funnel. Eventually it focuses down to the point of conversion. But I think you've made a really good point there that the analytics may well identify, if you really look at it, that actually they're in almost like a holding pattern, potentially, if they're not ready to buy on that first thing. Because I've always thought it's actually relatively linear. You know, they come down through the journey all the way down, hit the point of conversion, or they drop off. But of course, if they drop off on that initial visit, do they come back? And of course, repeat visits, we can see that in Google Analytics. So actually, as we put them into that kind of, well, the aircraft analogy is the stack, isn't it? You know, the aircraft stack as they're coming into an airport if it's not appropriate to land. And I always use that as the analogy for people who are in that kind of sort of holding pattern before they commit. But actually, I know, rather than just seeing it in the retention phase, where you try and get people to come back and repeat purchase eventually or become advocates, there's also, if the web analytics show this, there's also that kind of circular kind of waiting, holding pattern in the awareness phase before they do their first purchase sometimes. And of course, the analytics will throw that up, because you can then see, where do they go? Where did they come back? When did they come back? Right. That is quite profound, because I've been teaching this stuff for years and I've never even thought of it like that. But that is actually something you could identify, isn't it, earlier in the journey?
Well, yeah. And as I say, people don't, you know, you're the point of the journey. I mean, why do we analyze the journey? Because we recognize that there's more to it than just people buying stuff. You know, you come to some websites and it screams at you, buy this, buy this, buy this, and you're not ready. So it's really important to think through the whole process, I think, and what's the point? I mean, and you know, in marketing, we talk about macro and micro goals, right? So the macro goal might be the purchase, but then there are the micro goals, which is things like sign up for our newsletter, because, you know, you'll get this benefit. And signing up for a newsletter, it's amazing. You know, I don't know if you've thought about this, but do you remember when you first saw people saying email is dead? Because I can tell you, Wired magazine, I think, had a cover that said that back in about 2008, like it's almost, you know, 15 years ago or something. And what do marketers consistently say is one of their number one marketing channels is still email. Still now is email. So if you can get somebody's email address, you can go back to them, right? You know, thinking about how do we nurture relationships when people don't buy immediately is just a really key question.
And when you kind of describe it like that, the thing that kind of jumps into my head are the opportunities to test stuff or to at least kind of prove or disprove theory. So, I mean, the way you're kind of describing that thing, which made me think then of this holding pattern in the awareness stage, was also when there's like an emerging topic. So I'm thinking particularly here in the UK, a really hot topic for marketers and business owners is your sustainability credentials, you know, your carbon footprint and all of that. So it isn't just the Ben and Jerry's and the Patagonias of this world everybody knows about. It's kind of like, yeah, but little micro business there, what are your credentials? Because actually I need to understand that before I'm willing to buy that product from you, because I need to know that this has been ethically sourced, etc., etc. So right. I'm just thinking out loud here, would website Google Analytics enable you to kind of almost test at a granular level, particularly through, say, a search, for example, search facility on your website, how many people are actually inquiring about your credentials? So if you have a special new, maybe new section on your site that has got that, but you didn't have it maybe before Christmas or last year or whatever, but now you've got it and you want to know whether it's now a thing or it isn't quite a thing yet, that would be something you could test as an isolated case, wouldn't it? So that you knew right. then that that content is now part of the buying decision. And then if you see that a lot of people are going to look at that page, it's a new page, so it wasn't there before, but now people are looking at it, right, we need to build that into our broader marketing messages. So there's another big output opportunity there, isn't there?
But you also want to look at as well, if you have that content, do they go there and are they consuming the content? Like, so if you make a little video about our sustainability practices, I mean, one of the things I love is you can tell how many people watch the whole video, at what point do they drop off? And it's amazing if that video doesn't compel attention very, very early on. A lot of people don't watch. And I've seen so many examples where businesses spend a ton of money on well-produced, high-quality video, and it's not watched. So, you know, you, and the key to, I think, is saying you need to watch this video because, I mean, in some way you've got to get that across, right? So yeah, you want to know, A, are people going there, and B, are they consuming it, and then C, if relevant, are they then taking the call to action?
So it's actually quite ironic and good timing this, because I'm going to pick your brains now you're here. But I've got this group who actually later this week I'm taking through a teaching session, and the topic is digital optimization. So how to identify and then optimize an experience. So it could be website experience, it could be a broader, but it is digital, a digital experience. Where would a good starting point for that be? Because we've already been through some activities about, you know, where are the trends in your marketplace, who are your specific customers that you're targeting. The next session is going to be very much about where are the channels that you want to or need to prioritize, and how should you use analytics to begin to do that prioritization. If you were in my shoes and you had like 10 minutes with these guys, you know, where would you start with something like that? What would be a good starting point? Because, you know, obviously there's a million things we could do with these questions, isn't there? Where's a good way to start kind of the priorities of what's really most important?
So, you know, I mean, I feel like a broken record here. What do you want? You know, it just keeps going back to what are you trying to achieve? So, in terms of optimization, you know, if there are calls to action that are not being followed, why not? If you've put effort into content, is the content being watched and engaged with? If not, why not? Is the page too long? Can they not find the page? Do you have a ton of content and no site search so that people don't have an easy way to find their way around? And, you know, one of the things that we should remember about analytics is it's quantitative, right? It's numbers. So we have to make guesses as to why, whereas we don't want to lose sight that we really want to combine it probably with some qualitative stuff if you can. So, for example, user focus groups or I mean, one of the things that can be really fun is simply just to have a real live body in front of a screen and set them a task, right? So come to my web, which they've never seen, right? They've never seen your website before, right? Come to my website and find out where I talk about sustainability, for example, or whatever it is. And then you stand behind them so you can't direct them. But just watch where they go and what they do. And obviously you can get software that records that kind of stuff, right? But that can be really, really helpful, because the honest truth that I've always found is, and I, you know, I've been involved in creating strategy for websites as well. I mean, I do actually think that it's good to have a strategist involved when you design a site. And also you can actually strategize and design the site for better tracking, easier tracking. But, you know, whatever you do and however great you think your design is and your strategy is and the whole thing, people don't do what you expect. They just don't. And there is no such thing as a funnel to some extent. I mean, once you go into a shopping basket checkout, maybe, but you know, one of the things that's nice about Google Analytics 4 is they've allowed you can plot funnels. So you can say, here are some stages that I expect people to follow. But they've allowed that to be open or closed. So in other words, a closed funnel is they have to go through this exact sequence, otherwise it's not working. But an open funnel is they can come in and out of the sequence if they get to the end result. And that can be quite instructive, because people don't often don't do that linear thing that you think they're going to do. I'm always surprised by what actually happens on a website as opposed to what we thought should happen. So yeah, that's you just got to keep. That's why the analytics is so important, right? Because you can't be sure until you actually look at the numbers.
So if we're going to be sort of all of us now, having heard this and listened to your very wise advice, and there's not a single thing I can disagree with, because I absolutely agree with everything that you're saying here. And I'm certainly, from my experience, seeing it play out exactly as you're describing it. I guess if we're trying to turn information into intelligence, which, you know, that's a phrase I often hear myself saying. So it isn't about the numbers, it's the what if, and kind of like, what do you want to know? All those phrases that you've described there, Philippa. But Is there a part for AI to play in terms of doing that with us, for us? Because obviously, if I export a piece of GA4 data into a spreadsheet, load that into ChatGPT and say, come on, give me some intelligence. What should I do next month? Are you beginning to see trust in that, or is it still very, very early? Would you still say the quality is better from a human, or is it nearly there now?
Well, I think both. I haven't used it yet as much as I mean, I really should get more into it. And of course, GA4 has insights now that you can get, so which are quite good. I mean, it will start telling you questions that you should be asking, or it will flag things that seem anomalous, and you can get alerts about that. One of the issues with AI, you know, you said that some of your audience is smaller businesses, so you definitely have to have enough data to make the model that it's using worth it, because obviously you can't do predictions on 3 visitors. So people who have a lot of traffic to their website, I think, are going to get better results. And one of the things that is happening, you know, is because of all the privacy stuff. So we've got what we call consent mode. So, you know, you go to a website and it comes up and says, do you want to accept our cookies? And you can say no. Which, you know, is very, it's a very interesting double-edged sword for marketers, because, you know, if you ask your class, they're going to say, oh yeah, I like blocking cookies. I don't want to get ads, and I don't want to get this. But of course that means that we're not tracking them. And so, you know, we're not getting that data that we need to figure out how to do this better. So we don't want cookies ourselves, but we want everybody else to use them, now we can't track visitors who say they don't want to be tracked, then one of the things that AI is good at doing, if you have sufficient visitors, is to build predictive models based on, you know, what's going on, that says this is what visitors are likely to do. And that, I think, is going to be helpful I've seen estimates that say you can be losing, i.e. not tracking, up like 50% of the actual visits that you get. So one thing it's really important that I try to emphasize to clients is you know, this is not auditable numbers. If your analytics say you got X number of visitors, you almost certainly got more, but you can't see them. And that's just the way it is. So stop obsessing about why the numbers in GA4 don't match the numbers that you're getting out of another tool that you're using, because they probably won't. I mean, they won't, you know. And I've seen people tear their hair out. Like, you know, I've got this other tool and it says we got this, and this tool says we got that. And, you know, don't worry about it. I mean, you're looking for trends, patterns, that kind of stuff.
And that, again, is a little bit of a punishment, a little rap on the knuckles for those of us who are still doing the vanity metrics, because they were never right in the first place. Yeah, and now they're even more wrong, which is lovely. I like that. That's really nice. So if you had a crystal ball, Philippa, I often ask this question of guests on the podcast, say 5 years out, irrespective of AI, where do you see businesses? Do you think businesses will at long last have embraced these opportunities, because they feel really commercially kind of, you know, real commercial opportunities, if I'm being honest, when I listen to the way you're describing them. Do you think this will be a reality for most businesses within, say, 5 years?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, the figures say that a large proportion of businesses do say that they use analytics now. My contention would be that many of them don't use them effectively. So they are just looking at a dashboard and not doing much more. I don't particularly like, you know, when people ask me about kind of question, I tend to say I don't like predicting the future because I have enough trouble with the present. But I also feel like I'm seeing a bit of a backlash against all this privacy stuff. I mean, A, it's on the one hand, it's important. On the other hand, the data is so anonymized. Are we going over the top? Because we're also in stopping cookies and things like that, we're also impacting the digital experience. Because cookies also, for example, if you go back to a website and you've got something in your wish list or your shopping basket, you know, how does that get recorded with a cookie, right? So if you didn't have that cookie, you'd have to start again. So, you know, are we going to kind of find some happy medium where we have people comfortable with privacy and at the same time, we're able to get enough data about what's happening to make the digital experience better for our customers, which is really the goal, because then the customers will buy more, right? So, I mean, I think those are the questions. And of course, everybody's worried about their jobs. That's the other thing. And I don't know where that's going. You know, like, okay, is AI going to do analytics better than me? So I'm out of a job. I don't know. Hope not.
I think the consensus I'm picking up is that it becomes a trusted ally. It becomes somebody who sits on your shoulder and does all the hard work and lets you make a high level of decision. I think that's where, you know, the vast majority of people I'm interviewing and talking to are seeing it, where it's going. I think for most of us, there'll still be a human role somewhere in the process. It'll change undoubtedly, but I think it's just going to, it's going to evolve into something maybe more strategic, maybe a little bit more thoughtful, and maybe give us the time and space to do what we're talking about here. Because wouldn't that be nice.
I was going to say, because the creative side, so the bit where, so the AI could easily tell me that, hey, it looks like you've got employees coming to your law training website. But I don't know whether the AI is going to say, okay, great, how about we make some ebooks, you know?
So that's the kind of the added value then that we can provide.
Yeah.
And we'll have more time and space to do it. So I like that prediction. I think that's your prediction, Philippa. I think that's where you think it's going.
No, I think it's a hope rather than prediction, but we'll see.
either way, it's got to be a good outcome. And either way, hopefully everybody listening to this, I'm sure you'll have taken, you know, sort of, you know, good heed of the advice and the warnings that if you stick with vanity metrics, you are missing commercial opportunities. So it's time to be forensic. It's time to do those treasure trove kind of explorations through your data and your analytics. And obviously the ebook, which we will put into the notes for this particular episode. But I also want to give people an opportunity to kind of reach out to you, Philippa, because there will be people here who are thinking, okay, it all sounds great, but it's still too complicated and I've got another job to do. Philippa, can you help me? So if those people are there, how do they get hold of you?
Yeah, so hopefully you'll put a link to my website, websitesthatwin.com. And I do offer a 30-minute sort of free chat to see whether I might be able to help you or whether I can just give you a quick idea or something. And of course, I'm also on LinkedIn and I really happy to link with people on LinkedIn as well. So
brilliant.
Yeah, please. Yeah. And if anybody's got any questions, then, you know, obviously reach out.
Yeah, you've so hit the mark here, Philippa, in terms of, I think, you know, some of the pain points, but also some really clear guidance about what people need to do to both avoid vanity metrics. But I think the key thing here is to open up the opportunities. I think for me, that's the big kind of takeaway here, being curious about where's the commercial gain here, because, you know, for a lot of us, that's the ultimate kind of angle that we need to take. So thank you so much for your time and
thank you.
Wisdom here today.
It's been very fun. Thank you very much.